We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the podcast. The Pelicans have won some games and lost some games. And they're playing about 500 ball, which, I don't know, that's pretty much what I kind of expected of them coming into the season. Michael, was that about what you expected them? If I told you at the beginning of the season this team's fully healthy, were you expecting 500 ball or something different?
Yeah, 37 to 40 win team probably been my guess if healthy. And now we're here for that reality. It's just a 500 team that started off 0-8. So it's basically a team that has a chance to be 500 over 74 games. So, yeah, that's exciting.
So they've gone 6-4 over the last 10. And that feels like a nice number. Like when you look at it, you're like 6-4. That's two games up on the number of losses. That's pretty awesome. If you do the math, and they've played 41, exactly half the season, if you do the math, they would end up being 40 at the end of the season, or 40-41 at the end of the season with one game to play if they continued at this pace. So they'd have a chance at being a purely 500 team.
Yeah, let's go through those games, though, and tell me what you've been impressed by. So we have two wins against the Knicks, mm-hmm. a win against Brooklyn, a win against Dallas.
Without Anthony Davis, just that's something.
Yeah. A win against Dallas, a win against Miami, a win against Phoenix, and then a win against the Clippers team missing Blake Griffin, J.J. Redick, and with the hobbled Chris Paul that was still finding a way to dominate. So what impresses you there? Real 6-4?
You can't denigrate this. I'm sorry. Like, that's a real 6-4 because every year, I mean, I know you're always focused on the good teams. So I know you're going to say, hey, if they play good teams, they're going to lose most of those games. Like, yeah, so what? Like, every year you play half your games against good teams and half your games against bad teams. Actually, more like a third of your games against good teams, a third of your games against bad teams, a third of your games against other crappy teams or mediocre. I'm not going to sit here and say it's not real because the next 10 games, they're going to have half their games be against poor teams again. It's perfectly reasonable to think that.
But did they even beat mediocre team? Like you said, I agree with you. There's a third bad team, a third good team, and a third mediocre. Did they even beat a mediocre? When was the last time they even beat a mediocre team in your mind? I would say Indiana way back on December 15th. Like, I think they're straight beating up on bad teams, and that's going to run out. Those don't – that's not half of your schedule.
Yeah, but they're healthier now. I think they have a better chance to beat up on those mediocre teams.
Like, have they even beaten a team as good as – like, the teams I think are mediocre are, like, Washington.
Okay.
In these last six wins, would you put any of the – even up with a Washington or a – God, who's he? I mean, even a Portland. Have they even beaten anybody that you think is as good as Portland, who I think is like 5-6 games under 500 on their own?
No, not since the Pacers.
So that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, the bad teams do eventually run out. There's a finite number of them. And to me, they've played a lot of them in this stretch. And
I don't know. The Knicks without Derrick Rose might be a pretty decent team.
yeah, they were a little off that day though, just because of how it
was a mess.
Up, but
I watched that Knicks team, and I honestly thought that they were like just completely mentally fragile.
Yeah,
and Carmelo, they lose big, and he gets himself chucked out of the game completely, like. That just annoyed the crap out of me. Stay in the game, man. Suck it up.
Yeah, but I mean, to your point, they're beating teams that they quote unquote should beat, or at least, you know, you got to give them some props because there's teams out there that don't even beat the bad teams. So that's fine. They're doing that. I guess the question I have for you is, forget wins and losses. As the season is going on, do you see something that they could build off of with future seasons, whether it be specific players that you could say for sure are here to stay, or an offensive identity or a defensive identity, anything that you could say, win or lose, I don't care. This team is improving in these areas, and they're building an identity for the future.
So I will say that they are improving defensively. I 100% believe that they are improving defensively. The issue is the players that they have been using to give them that slight defensive edge it has. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, oh, they're sixth in the league. The difference between sixth and 13th is really minuscule here. I mean, in another 2 weeks, you could be back at 13th, and it wouldn't even take that many games with bad losses to get there. They're playing well defensively. They're not amazing defensively. It's not something they can hang their head on. And my worry is the players that give them that defensive edge have no offensive talent whatsoever. So if you're going to lock yourself into that, you're going to also lock yourself into a 25th ranked offense at the same time. Which, you know, if you really think about it, Anthony Davis is a highly efficient, crazy offensive player. And this team can't get out of the bottom 10 offensively right now. It's 100% true that we have just flipped it. We've basically gone back and said, all right, this summer we're going to go all defensive. And they went out and got a bunch of defensive guys, and they tweaked their scheme, and people are buying into it now. And they've lost some people who weren't buying into it because their entire identities were offensive. And now they've gotten rid of those people, replaced with people who will do it. And they've just fallen apart on the offensive end. So is there something that they can hang their hat on? I don't know, because unless you can find a guy who is great on both ends of the floor, you're not going to sacrifice one without sacrificing the other, or gain on one side without sacrificing on the other. Like, Buddy Hield is a nice player, and he may actually be better defensively based on what I've been watching recently than I thought he was going to be, but he's also not going to be a star for you. So, no. That's a long way of saying no.
Yeah, I'm gonna do that on my next test I have to take forever. But I mean, that's my other concern is, like, yeah, they're moving needles a little bit here and there in certain areas. But then I step back and I go, okay, Buddy Hield, Anthony Davis. What other guy would I bet one of my three Xboxes on that is going to be – that's in the rotation right now, that's going to be in the rotation in 2018, 2019.
I like that you had to mention there you have three Xboxes.
Yeah, not Xbox Ones. I'm talking about old. So like,
no, I'm not supposed to clarify that. You're supposed to be like, yeah, I'm rolling.
No, it's not that to brag. It's actually because of stupidity, because the first one I got modded, and then, you know, Xbox Live found out, so that basically that one got shut down. Then I went and got another one and got that one modded, and the whole thing happened again, and then I needed a non-modded one to play live. It was all a nightmare, but I haven't had the balls to throw one out now. I just got three basically paperweights in my back office. But that's the thing, is it's like they just keep bringing in all these C-plus guys and, okay, Buddy's off today, so let's throw in more. And then, you know, Montejunas is 0 for 7 today, so let's play Cunningham more. Let's play Jones more. And it's like they're just doing whatever they do to try to win tonight's game. So what I'm wondering is, even if they find any ways of improving, like, is it sustainable? Because who knows who's going to be on this team or in this rotation? Heck, forget 2018, 2019, next year. Like, who else could you say other than Buddy, Anthony Davis, and probably Solomon Hill, because he has to be, because nobody's taken it. Who else on this team could you say you know for sure is going to be a part of the regular rotation next year that's on this team? So I even any improvement, I don't know how much it's really going to carry over.
Yeah, I mean, I fully expect there'll be more than that left on the team next summer, even if there's a regime change, which I think is more likely than not. But because you can't come in and blow up everything. So maybe you can tweak it and be in the middle on both offense and defense. It's just I understand exactly where you're coming from. There isn't anything here that is laying a permanent good foundation. And my take on what they were trying to do in the offseason, and it just hasn't worked out, was if you can go to a couple mid-tier free agents and say, our team is good enough to win 40 games in a season. If you come on, we're going to win 50 or 55. And that's probably an exaggeration, but at least you can sell that. I've got Anthony Davis. I've got these guys who are role players. They're happy being in their roles. You come in, you help us out. And, you know, we know you're not a superstar, but you're pretty good. We're going to start actually competing in the playoffs every year. You can have that kind of conversation. It didn't work out at all again. It's really hard to walk up to someone and say, hey, we won 33 games last year, and the next step is, oh, you might put us into the playoffs. Well, there's going to be a team who will have won 41 games who's going to that same free agent saying the same thing. So I said in the offseason they were laying a foundation with the hopes that they could then have the pillars built on top of it instead of trying to grab offensive pillars right off the bat and then laying a foundation around them. It seems to have resulted in the same net thing in the end.
Yeah, I don't know how much they're going to be able to take from this season. I would say the one thing that hopefully they walk away from this season with, that it looks like they're trying now, can Anthony Davis be a starter on the floor without a true center next to him?
Yeah.
But when you shoot threes the way that this team does, even though they're extremely open, I mean, they're hitting 35% from three. If they got that up to 36.5% even, it might be worthwhile to get beat up on the boards, and you're still going to win more than you lose. But the advantage that we're creating by going small isn't really an advantage, because we're not doing – I mean, we don't hit from three, and I don't know. Maybe I don't watch the league enough, but I just feel like all of our guards and wings finish around the basket worse than any other team I happen to watch on top of that. So what's the use of getting all these good shots if we just have a bunch of guys who can't finish them?
Yeah. So of our guards, who would you say is the best at finishing around the rim? I know who it is because I looked it up, I guess it was a week ago now. If of all the guards on this team currently, so it doesn't count Lance Stephenson or any of those guys, who do you think is the best finisher within 3 feet of the basket?
I would guess it's Etuan Moore off of like some kind of small sample size in which he gets open layups.
It's Tim Frazier.
Okay, yeah, that
by a good margin. Like, it's not even close.
I believe that. Yeah, that makes. I wasn't even thinking about him because he doesn't play, but yeah.
That's right. Frazier's the one guy who could finish around the rim. Like,
you know, again, what's the point of creating all these looks when I don't know if you have an above-average offensive player? I would say Tyreek probably is against bad teams. But, I mean, even him, what is he? He's shooting on the season 46% from two and 31% from three. Like, I don't know. It seems like a team full of really bad offensive players, and that's crazy when you could imagine how many open looks or how much more open they are because of a guy like Anthony Davis on their team. So it's a trade-off, and maybe what they'll learn from this season is that it's a trade-off that's worthwhile. They just need to get some players who actually are decent offensively.
Yeah. But if they go after the available decent offensive players, typically those guys are pretty bad on the other
right.
end of the floor.
It's just going back and forth. It's Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson.
Right.
And then you get rid of them because your defense makes you sick to your stomach. And then you go get a bunch of hardworking guys who are going to play defense. And then now your offense is just – and it's going back and forth because they don't have draft picks that are good enough to get – really good two-way players. They don't have the market that free agents want to come to get really good two-way players, and they don't have the assets that you trade to get really good two-way players. So they're just in this – they're on this hamster wheel just deciding, do I want to get a good defensive player who sucks at offense or a good offensive player who sucks at defense? And it's just going to keep going around and round, and they're just going to keep getting these C-plus players – that just makes you wish that they would have gotten the other type of C-plus player.
So the one thing I would say I would disagree with is I actually think they are getting good enough draft picks and will continue to get them that they could get impact players. They're just not going to pick the kind of guy who could turn into the long-term impact player like we saw this last draft where they were. Huh?
If you could go back in time, who would have you have taken at six that you feel –
I think Murray still has a chance to be a very good offensive player who's fine defensively. Like, I think the ceiling there is higher.
I don't see a two-way. But I've always liked Murray, but I don't see a two-way player. I think we'll look back and it wasn't a very good draft.
Yeah, but let me ask you this though. So maybe you don't see a two-way player, but there is the potential there for him to be an A offensive player and a D plus or C minus defensive player.
Yeah, and then right back in the Ryan Anderson boat.
Yeah, but Ryan Anderson is not an A offensive player in my world.
Okay, hold on. Before I move on to the next thing, I'm going to say one positive thing about one other player, just so I don't get labeled as all negative. I think that this will be Etuan Moore's worst season as a Pelican. I really believe that with another year of training camp, more familiarity with the team and the season, and maybe, you know, a defined role. He came in this year as a starter, got moved back to bench, shared time with Galloway. I think if done right, he'll have a defined role next year. He'll be in the system. And then, like, even watching the Chicago game, he felt so comfortable shooting in that arena. You know, soon his New Orleans arena will be his home arena and he'll get used to it. I think that Etuan Moore, we are seeing his worst Pelican season and he's going to be our most improved player next year. I'm saying that now. So there's a positive thing I truly believe.
So let me continue that thought then, because that was actually something I was going to ask you. Because of all the guards, I almost feel like he's the most steady right now. So Etuan Moore, What is your ceiling for him? Pick one shooting guard in the league today you think that he could get to at best.
That's tough. I'm trying to scan my memory banks for a bunch of Courtney Lee.
Okay. That was very, yeah. I was thinking that if he can get his stroke to go more, he's got a slow 3-point shot, so it's kind of hard for him to get lots of volume off, but he could approach Danny Green for me.
See, and that's the thing with this season is I watched a lot of Etuan Moore over the summer. He never brought the ball down to his waist when shooting. I mean, that's just a hitch that he's picked up this year. And then when he doesn't do it, he gets on fire like he did against Chicago. It's like this hesitation in his shot that wasn't there before. And that's what I'm saying. I think once he gets more comfortable and, you know, feels good in his role and has it defined, I think you'll see that hitch go away and he'll have a little bit quicker and better of a trigger. I'm confident of Moore. I think that some of the guards have to go, and he has to have I think he'll be a nice sixth or seventh man moving forward. And next year he starts the season coming off the bench and knows that's his role. And, I think you'll see him a lot more comfortable next year.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned Jrue Holiday before. What if you were Dell Demps and you were given the directive by Mickey Loomis to submit what the maximum salaries are to his office so that he knows what the most you would offer for certain players are so that he could take a look at it and plan or approve or disapprove or whatever, and you had to write down a number for Jrue Holiday, what you would give, and of course you try to negotiate for better, but the maximum contract, years and dollars, you would hand Jrue Holiday this summer, what would it be?
I think the max I would go would be 3 for $60.
Okay.
Yeah, that I couldn't go higher, but I would do everything in my power to get as much in a trade as I could for him over the next month so I wasn't put in that situation.
Yeah. I'm to the point where I wouldn't give him $20 million
a year. What would your number be?
I would probably go 4 years, but 4 for $60 would probably be what I would give for him.
Yeah, and that's not going to be able to keep him.
No, it's not. And if you're thinking about it in terms of total amount of salary cap, by next year, $20 million a year, you're basically giving 18%, 19% of the cap, almost one-fifth of your cap to that single guy. And Jrue Holiday, as great as he is in moments defensively, he is barely above an average. I don't even know if I would say an average starting point guard for me. I could probably legitimately walk through point guards in this league right now and come up with 18 guys I'd rather have than him.
Yeah, I did it a couple of weeks ago, and it was like 12 guys I would definitely rather have than him, and then there was 9 guys, I believe, that I needed to know what the situation was, and I didn't include, like, the D'Angelo Russells because, obviously, I would take D'Angelo Russell for the future and, you know, all that stuff. I just took basically just, you know, veterans, you know, young veteran point guards. And that's what I came up with. And it was, like I said, different things for the situation. Like who's an example of a for the situation guy? I'm drawing a blank here, but George Hill. But again, I went and watched Utah live the other night at good seats. And I walked away from that game where I felt stupid even thinking there was a debate between George Hill and Jrue Holiday. And the main thing is, like, I'll watch all these other guards around the league, and they – I don't know a better way to put it than they know who they are, and they're just that guy. And Drew Holiday, it's like he's always – I don't think he's ever figured out, or he's just been put in too many different situations in this league. Like last year he was told to come and be a gunner off the bench, so he did that. Now he's supposed to run an offense and push the ball more and set up other guys or whatever, so he's trying to do that. And it's like he just always gets pushed and pulled between all these different things that when I watch him play, I never see any kind of certainty that he knows what he's doing and he's just going to play that way that night. You know, he's like an undefined player that really doesn't seem to know who he is or what he wants to be. And I don't see that with other guys. Like when I see George Hill play, he has the supreme confidence and he knows what he's going to do. And even Ricky Rubio has that. His shot is terrible, but he knows he's going to bring the ball up the court. He's going to get the ball to the right guy. He's going to set the offense. He's going to play great defense. Like, I just always get this feeling that Drew Holiday has no idea who he is as a player, and that might not be his fault, but I just have no interest in him being on this team long term.
Yeah, and I mean, the way I look at it, the reason why I was saying $15 million, and, you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who think I'm an idiot for doing that, but if I look at the NBA, every single team has enough cap space and that you're going to have room for two max players, or one max player, one near max player. That's the reality of the NBA. So when people say that guy's a max player, he doesn't deserve it, that's stupid. There's room for 60 max players in the league. But basically, to me, as soon as you hit 20 million or more, when you're in that 20% to 30% of the salary cap, you've got to be an impact player, a guy who actually makes your team significantly better. You have to be that. And there can be 30 or 40 guys in the league that are doing that, and then there's another 20 guys who are getting paid that way, and they're not that. And if you take a look at, if Drew Holiday's the 18th best point guard in the league, that means he's probably really somewhere between the 90th and 100th best player in the league. Maybe because there's a lot of good point guards, he's the 80th best player in the league. I mean, you can't pay that guy over $20 million a year. You're not going to get what you need out of it. Got to keep that. And then I know I can't sit here and say, well, they can go get this person who'll be better for the $20 million. I know that guy's not necessarily available, but that decision has to be reached this summer, which means you know what's coming. You should be planning ahead and you should be doing what you're talking about, which is find something for him.
Yeah, the only counter I'll say is, to me, the reason I would feel comfortable with giving 3 for $60 million is because I asked the question of, when you asked me that question, I said to myself, what's the maximum contract I could give him that I could still turn around 4 months later and flip him if, let's say, the season started off bad again?
Okay.
And I think you could move and even get a little something for Drew Holiday on a 3-year, $60 million contract.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be what I think he's worth.
It'd be like the Nene contract for Nuggets.
Yeah, it's not what I think he's worth as much as, you know, what I think is a contract that still would be able to be tradable around the league. So that's why I'd be willing to go that high. Again, if the alternative was lose him, get nothing, and then just spread that $20 million around. You know, we saw this offseason what we could get for $20 million, Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore. Who do I think would have more value on the trade market? Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore, each with 3 years left on their contract, or Drew Holiday? The answer would be Drew Holiday, so that's why I'd be willing to give him that, you know, just because he would still be a tradable guy as opposed to getting nothing for him.
Yeah, I want to have the counter be, well, who's going to give someone like Solomon Hill $12 million next year? But every single year somebody does it, so.
Yeah, so I'll flip the question. So we talked about the most that we would give them, what's the least that you would take in a trade? And so let's say Chicago calls you. I'll kind of tell you, I'll tell you all the things on their roster that I like. None of them, you know, blow you away. But let's say they call you and say, all right, Rondo for Drew, we're doing that. I don't know what that is. Rondo for Drew, we're doing that. Now you're going to have to pick 1, 2, 3 little assets. And yeah, you could go ahead and dump Rondo, but that's the center of the trade. So here's their quote unquote little assets. They have McDermott is probably going to be hard to get. Jerian Grant, Bobby Portis, Cristiano Felicio, Denzel Valentine, Paul Zipster. They have their own first round pick, and then they would have Sacramento's first round pick if Sacramento didn't finish, I think, in the top 12. So basically, if Sacramento makes the playoffs or gets close. So they have all those little things. It's going to be Rondo for Drew. What other of those little things would be the absolute least you would take in a team from, say, like Chicago?
Their pick.
So Rondo and their pick with an agreement that you buy out Rondo, and that's enough for you.
Yeah.
Wow, that's – so you're talking about what would probably turn out to be, let's say they make the playoffs, let's say the 16th or 17th pick.
Yeah. And I'm sure, again, people are probably screaming about this. He's our rental. Like, the Bulls have no guarantee he's staying with them. There are dozens of, if the Boston Celtics walk onto the stage in the summer and say, here, we'd like to pay you $20 million, do you think he's staying with the Bulls?
I think if somebody trades for Drew Holiday, he's staying with them.
You think so?
Yeah, because...
I think that depends on the agreement. And I don't know if you can, like, yeah, anyways, go ahead.
No, I just don't think there's many teams that need a point guard. And if somebody trades for them and gives up an asset, they're interested in enough to want him long term.
Okay.
So I think he stays long. The only way I think Drew Holiday gets traded and ends up somewhere else is if, let's say, so he gets traded to the Bulls, and then, I don't even know if this would work. He gets traded to the Bulls, CP3 gets sucked to San Antonio, and now the Clippers have an open point guard spot and are asking Drew Holiday to come back home. But even in that situation, unless they trade Blake, I don't even know if they'd have the cap room. To me, there aren't a ton of teams in need of a point guard, and the ones who do are probably pretty bad teams drafting high, and there's a lot of point guards going to be taken high in this year's draft. So I think if somebody trades for Drew, they have a 90% chance of keeping him, as long as they, you know, give him a respectful offer.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, would you say that Drew Holiday today is as good as Goran Dragic was when he was traded?
No.
You think he's worse?
Yeah.
Okay. And Goran Dragic, when he was traded to Miami, netted 2, and at the time, because everybody thought Bosch was going to remain healthy, basically 2 picks that people assumed were going to be somewhere between 18 and 30 when they were conveyed.
Yeah.
And maybe you could convince yourself that Bosch is going to fall apart, and maybe the second one is going to be 10th. So I don't know if, like, it seems to me that expecting the 16th pick for a 1-year rental that you then have to pay a ton of money, giving up only a pick is about what the market bears these days. So,
yeah, and if that's the case, I don't know if that's going to be enough for Dell to take the hit that he would take in the press conference.
Right. Well,
like,
what has to be the scenario for that to even happen? Like, if I told you today that on the trade deadline day, Drew Holiday was no longer a Pelican, what do you think the situation with the Pelicans is at that point? What could make that happen?
Honestly, I would think that they would have to – so it all comes down, and this is what's so stupid, is there's like probably 2,000 fans who actually really, really care about the Pelicans. Like, I know there's 15,000 that go to the game, but they're not all listening to this podcast or hardcore reading the blogs or Justin Verrier or whatever. There's like 2,000 people who actually really care about this team that, you know, are going to dive deep into whatever trades that are made. And yet, for some reason, I think that they think they've got to win the press conference or at least, you know, make some kind of justifiable trade that, you know, that fans will like, which I don't get, but I feel like that was part of it with Ryan Anderson last year. And I think the way that they could do that, that, you know, people might buy, is if they say that they wanted to get Jrue Holiday somewhere where him and his wife, you know, not blame it on his wife, but basically put the narrative out there that, yeah, him and his wife want to live closer to their home in North Carolina or live whatever. And then you could put out some kind of narrative about how we've appreciated Jrue and, you know, whatever, but as he sets his sights on free agency, it was best for him and his family to be closer to the, I don't know. They would have to put out some BS like that because they have to control the narrative and, you know, even justify it to Anthony Davis. Like, what do you think Anthony Davis would say if they traded Jrue for Rondo in a first round pick today?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they would go and tell Anthony Davis, because for years, isn't the mantra been when Jrue comes back, we'll be okay. So
yeah, and they are. They're 500. I mean, they're a lot better than the 0-8 that Anthony Davis had to go through, and I know he doesn't want to go through that again. I mean, truth be told, now that I think about it, to me, the only way Jrue Holiday is traded is if Anthony Davis gets a relatively serious or whatever, if he gets some kind of injury, and they're sitting at 18 and 34, and Anthony Davis is injured, and he's not going to have to play much this year anyway, so he doesn't care that Tim Frazier's out there instead of Jrue Holiday.
Right.
But if Anthony Davis is on the court playing, I don't see how they do it, and that's the kind of short-sighted, stupid stuff this franchise does over and over and over again, because even if Anthony Davis is mad this year, if it's 2019 and this team is winning at a good clip because this trade set him up well for the future, do you think he remembers about February of 2017 when he was mad back then? No, I mean, we all remember things based on our current situation. Our memory are the most faulty things that we have as human beings, but this franchise will keep doing short-sighted stuff like this because they won't know what to tell Anthony Davis and because they won't know how to sell it to the fans. So I don't think he gets traded.
Okay. Then let me ask you the next step, because I was pretty certain it was going to happen already before the season started. Tyreke Evans. Do you see him still as a Pelican after the trade deadline? Do you think they're showcasing him? Do you think they actually feel he gives them a chance to win, so he'll remain on the team? And this is assuming Anthony Davis is healthy, Jrue Holiday's healthy. It's now the trade deadline. Is Tyreke Evans, after the trade deadline, a New Orleans Pelican?
If they're within 5 games of the shiny 8th place, yes, he is.
Okay.
Because I think he's – I mean, because then in that situation, the only way they trade him – is if it's for somebody who they think helps them win more, but why would the other team do that then?
Right.
Like, where you get, unless it's another team that wants to sell, but, it, you know,
Orlando.
They want to sell and they want to get rid of a bigger contract, but which of those guys is going to move the needle for the Pelicans more than Tyreke Evans is? So, yeah, I think they're determined to be average, determined to try to go for this 8th seed, and they'll probably get some offers of, like, high second-round picks or maybe some young guys for Tyreek Evans' services, like some fringe young guys who aren't going to be stars but might be rotation players. And they're just going to say, no, Tyreek helps us win more now. And they're going to keep him and either make the eight seed or barely miss it. And then he'll be gone next year and it'll just be Ryan Anderson all over again.
Okay. All right. So let me tell you what I'm thinking, and then you can call me an idiot or whatever you like. I want the Pelicans to go after the eighth seed at this point.
Okay.
I want them to do whatever they can to go after the playoffs right now. I want them to play whatever players they feel are most likely. If they want them to look on the trade market, I want them to go after guys who could give them bumps that would help propel them towards the playoffs. I'm not saying that whatever those trades are, they should sacrifice everything in the future to get those kinds of guys. So don't go get a guy who you're only going to get like 3 months out of and give away the farm, like all your draft picks. But if you can get a reasonable guy who probably stick around for a little while and he would make it a better chance to get the playoffs, I think they should go after that guy. And the number one reason why I'm saying that is I firmly 100% believe there is no chance at all that this team is going to be bad enough the rest of the season, unless Anthony Davis suffers a catastrophic injury, that they're not going to be, they're going to be getting something amazing in this draft. They'll get another draft pick that's going to get them someone probably pretty mediocre. The team is probably still going to be buying, going after the guys who's going to help them right away in the offseason and in the draft. So next year, they're going to be maybe incrementally better, a little bit better. And again, that keeps them in the same spot. So next year, maybe they're a little better. If they miss the playoffs this year while trying to get there, or if they make the eighth seed with 38 wins, next year, incrementally better, 41 wins. It's still, they're trying to improve a little bit right here within the confines of what their directive from their ownership is. And I would rather watch a team that wins 41 games or 44 games and at least has a chance to make it to the playoffs than a team that just keeps what they have right now and exactly what they have, and they just kind of puts their way into 34 wins and 35 wins. I want them to try to do something to win. Because I'm telling you right now, there's no chance in hell they're going to do the opposite. There's just no way. And you know that. I mean, you talk about it all the time on Twitter. So given my confines of what I can hope for, what this team's leadership is going to direct, I want them to try to go for it. I want to see them go after those guys who are available on the trade market and make trades. And if they have to trade away the draft pick, fine, if it gives us a chance at an additional 3 or 4 wins per year. Because at least I want to sit down at my TV when I'm going to watch the Pelicans and have a 50-50 chance I'm going to see a win. And right now I feel like I have a more likely than not going to see a win. And honestly, this is the second time in my life as a fan of the New Orleans Pelicans. This is only the second season of my life. I watch all my games on tape delay. If it's a really good team we're playing, I check about 60% of the way through the game and make sure it's not a blowout at that point. And if it's a blowout, I don't watch the thing. I've stopped watching the ones that are blowouts. I watch any other. If we're only down like 8 or 10, I watch the game. But there have been 4 times this season where I've looked at the score and our team has already been down 18 points and it's only the third quarter and I'm like, forget it. Like, what's the point? And other seasons I haven't even looked. Like, I'm fine. I'll go watch the game. Even if it ends up being a blowout, maybe, you know, I'll turn it off halfway through the fourth quarter because it's stupid to watch because the scrubs are in. But at this point, I want to have a chance at not having those games more often than not. So,
and see, I'm not going to call you an idiot for that. To me, I mean, that's what my whole Paul Millsap article was about anyway. And that's, I just want them to pick one or the other. And I agree, like, there's no such thing as halfway crooks. I totally believe in that saying. And either trade Drew, like what I would love in a fantasy world, I trade Drew to the Bulls. I get the Sacramento pick and a couple other assets. And then meanwhile, I got a backdoor trade with Sacramento that's going to help get them into the playoffs so I could actually get their pick. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I think is a little too smart for this organization, but that's what I would be doing on that end. That would be mine. I don't think they're going to do it. So, yeah, I agree. Go the other way. Like, I'm telling you, for 100% fact, they could get Paul Millsap today if they wanted to. They could have had Mike Dunleavy for nothing. They could have had Kyle Korver for very little. There's a lot of other things out there that, I mean, they could do, but instead they just go, no, I'd want to keep my assets, and we're just going to keep getting these C-plus guys and hope that one of them magically turns into a B or is the right answer or, you know, puts the whole puzzle together. And then so they just keep puttering through this, you know, not choosing either side. I totally agree with you. If they just go out and say, here's the first round pick, you know, we're going all in on Paul Millsap, and yeah, we're going to pay the heck out of him, and, you know, we're going to pay Drew too, and basically this is going to be the core of our team, and we're going to be over the cap before free agency even starts, but we're going to have a nice little foundation. I'd be all for that. But they're trying to, like, have their foot in one and not the other, and, you know, what they're going to wind up doing is just do what they always do, and, you know, they're going to use up these guys like Tariq, get nothing for them, and then lose them for nothing, and then go replace them with another C-plus guy, and they're just going to be stuck in between the two. So I completely agree with you. I would be very happy with a 41-45 win team, but just go for it. Don't pick up any more Monty Junises or keep playing Dante Cunningham, whatever. Just go up, give up the assets you do have, and just go all in on a guy like Millsap. That totally makes sense to me.
Okay. I kind of expect you to be like, no. We gotta hope that they, like, fall apart and turn into a tank.
Well, that's what I hope for every day. No, every day. I mean, I am rooting for a – I am rooting – if they lose, like, part of me is like, well – if they lose to the Pacers and Magic and Nets, if they lose these next three, like, then they've got to see that this season is a lost cause. And then, they won't. Like, they won't. They'll find some justification to keep going, or Portland will keep losing, or whatever. They'll lose those three games, and they'll still only be two games out of the playoffs or whatever, and they'll keep this false sense of hope. So, like, no, I would root for a loss every game. I'm not saying I'd root for Anthony Davis to get hurt because of the hurt part of it, but I wish, you know, he would get summoned for jury duty in, you know, a massive trial in which he has to miss the next 4 weeks. That would be pretty awesome.
All right, so I had one question I wanted to ask you. So the world last season turned on Anthony Davis. He went from the golden child to the maybe not quite as golden child as everybody thought. They had all kinds of people who were disappointed in him. This season he came out of the gates and people were like, whoa, Anthony Davis. And now he's falling back to earth a little bit. He's not playing quite as amazing, but he's still obviously very good. I mean, 29-12. Those numbers just by themselves, 29-12, like, insane. But I wanted to get your take, and I know you're a little biased being a New Orleans fan, but...
Don't ever call me a fan. Go ahead.
Okay. A New Orleans watcher. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, I'm an observer.
Okay. Is there any big man in this league that you would trade Anthony Davis for?
So big man as in height or the position he put, I'll keep it simple. Is there anybody I would trade him for?
Well, no, I mean, cause I mean, I would trade him for like Steph Curry or there's some people there, but
would you trade him for Kawhi Leonard?
You know, that's the guy I would get closest to trading him for. I would have to think really long and hard on it. And Kawhi's contract is small compared to Anthony Davis's.
I to me, I don't even come down to all that stuff. Like, just watching that Chicago game, Anthony Davis put up good numbers, but I knew they were going to lose that game because he had zero emotion in it. And I'm to the point where I know for a fact, I don't care if the guy averages 35 and 15, I will never love him the way I loved Chris Paul.
Okay.
Like, there's a 0% chance of that. Like, he's just, like, Chris Paul was just so smart, and he cared so much, and he was so passionate, and he was so much, you know, so many intangibles that I like Anthony Davis, but I'll never be the fanboy I was like for Chris Paul. Chris Paul just could do no wrong in my eyes. But so for me, the Kawhi stuff, just the intangible winner stuff and just the, you know, there's something about him that, yeah, I would consider it even outside of the numbers. But the only one, and I would really have to talk to some doctors, the only one I would consider would be Embiid. Not even Carl Anthony Towns. I've never I see what that other people like him, and he's a good player. I don't love his game others the way others do. But if you told me that Embiid and Anthony Davis were going to have similar injury histories, which might mean they're both out for their career, but if they had similar injury histories over the next 10 years, I might take Embiid just because he's more fun of a character. He's, you know, he's a more interesting guy, and he's, you know, his game might be more fun on the court, but that was the only one that I consider.
Hmm. I haven't even considered Embiid.
Who were you thinking?
Oh, I wouldn't trade him for anybody. Like any, there's no big man in the league right now that I would trade him for. But I honestly had not thought about Embiid, and it's just because in the back of my mind I still think of Embiid as like a dramatically awful, scary injury risk beyond. Like, people who talk about how Philly is going to be scary and scary for years coming because they've got these two awesome draft picks coming up, and Simmons is going to be back and they're going to be amazing. Like, and I'm like, but Embiid literally missed two entire years of basketball with injuries. And other than Zydrunas Ilgauskas, I can't think of any big man ever who has had that situation where they didn't start suffering major injuries again.
Yeah, there's just something about Davis, if I'm being honest, of where I wonder why he can't make his teammates better. Like, the Memphis Grizzlies had stretches where Conley and Randolph and Parsons were out, and they had a roster around Gasol that was even worse than what we were putting up when we started 0-8.
Mm-hmm.
And they won game. Like, I think they went 6-2 or 7-2 without Conley. And a lot of that was without Parsons too. And it's just like, what is it about Gasol's game that you could put a bunch of scrubs around him and they're still winning games? But Anthony Davis, even now with supposedly quality players, like the whole team's here except for Quincy. And then they go into Chicago and, you know, basically lay an egg, or, you know, Cleveland tries to give them the game and they can't win or whatever. Like, what is it about Marc Gasol? Because would you agree with that? Like, if you put the same 8 players on a roster with Marc Gasol and Anthony Davis, don't you believe Marc Gasol's team would win more?
No.
So
I don't.
Then why did they?
Because I think Marc Gasol's players around him are actually, there's some really, really good defensive talent there. I know that they're considered scrubs, and in the greater schemes of things, they kind of are, but I think there is more athleticism and talent there than what the Pelicans have pulled together for our perimeter guys. They're just all long, and they're tough, and whenever you watch a Memphis Grizzlies game, and sure, part of it's Marc Gasol, but it just feels like the Pelicans are being mugged the entire game. There is always someone pulling and yanking and grabbing, and they set the tone with the refs at the beginning of, hey, we're going to start doing this, and either you blow the whistle every 3 seconds, or you're going to have to let some of it go, and we're going to make Anthony Davis walk out of here with 72 bruises on his body.
Let me tell you the Memphis rotation players during this five-game winning streak.
Okay.
Troy Williams, these are the only guys who played. Troy Williams, can you even tell me anything about him?
Yeah, he used to play in Houston. He was a pretty good shooter.
Troy Williams?
Yeah.
You're not thinking of Troy Williams is a rookie.
Oh, well then, no, I can't tell you anything about him.
Exactly. Jamichael Green.
Yeah.
Tell me a couple things about him.
I saw that he made Anthony Davis's life miserable the time we played them.
Okay. Andrew Harrison.
Yeah, I know. I just know that he went to Kentucky and bombed.
Okay. Tony Allen, of course, we know, but not somebody you'd consider. Troy Daniels, who might have been somebody you're thinking
That's
of.
That's who I was thinking of, sorry. Yeah, Troy Daniels.
Okay. Wade Baldwin.
Rookie.
And Jarrell Martin. Like, they won multiple games with these guys.
Yeah.
You're telling me that even when Tyreek was hurt, or even when Drew was hurt, you're telling me the guys around Anthony Davis were worse than that? Like, they're not. Like, there's just something about Anthony Davis that I think he puts up amazing stats and he's amazing, quality player. But is he gonna help you win at the end of games? Is he? I mean, even I'm watching the Memphis game right now, and like, Gasol isn't walking up the court every single time like Anthony Davis. Like, I don't know. Again, I'm nitpicking here, and he's still a great player, but I would think about somebody like Embiid, and I would probably – there's probably 5 to 10 guards and wing players that I would trade Anthony Davis for, just because it's clear to me that you're just not winning big time in this league unless you have a guard or a wing that is really creating offense for himself and others.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Anthony Davis ever is going to get that next to him. Especially if they don't tank. So maybe I would just try to go that route if I could.
Okay. I was just wondering. It was praying on my mind, and I wanted to see what you had to say.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's still a very good player. I agree.
Would you still have him in your top 10?
I think he's a top 10 talent. Like I said, I don't know if the greatest bigs really help you win. Especially nowadays, like, I'm trying to think if Tim Duncan in his absolute prime, where would you draft him if, like, there was a draft for this season? Because, like, what I'm saying is Tim Duncan in his prime is a better player than James Harden. That's not debatable, right?
Right.
But James, who would help you win more in this day and age in the NBA? Tim Duncan surrounded by, an average mix of players, or James Harden surrounded by an average mix of players? I think in this NBA it would be Harden, right?
Maybe.
So that's what I'm saying.
I'm one of the biggest Tim Duncan fanboys around. So.
Oh, I'm huge. Like, to me, when people debated Duncan versus Kobe, I laugh. Like, it's not a debate. So I love Duncan, but in today's day and age in NBA, like, as great as Anthony Davis is, I still think a guy like Jimmy Butler, who, again, I don't think Jimmy Butler's as good as AD. I don't think it's close. I think Isaiah Thomas helps his team win more than Anthony Davis does.
Yeah, I think you're going a little too far afield there.
I really don't. I mean, Isaiah Thomas, like, you get to the fourth quarter of games, Isaiah Thomas is leading the league in fourth quarter scoring. All of a sudden, AD is exhausted, and field goal percentage is terrible. And again, they're isolating him. A couple guys double him, and he doesn't really do anything with it. He has to give it up to a guard anyway.
So I agree with you on the fact that he is probably not going to generate shots as well as some of those guys. But if you put Anthony Davis on the floor running a pick and roll with a dynamic guard who can finish shooting or at the rim, just a good one, that combination is way more lethal than that guard with anybody else. And so I think it's like a wild curve, like a major parabolic curve. I honestly believe that if we took someone like Mike Conley and put them on this team, that this team would be nearly unstoppable offensively when it matters.
Because I completely agree, but you need a qualifier. You need Anthony Davis to now go get Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas has been doing it with Jerebko and Tyler Zeller and Jared Sollinger and, you know, all of these scrub bigs even before Al Horford got there. Or even when Al Horford's injured this year, he's doing it with all of these guys. Like, I totally agree. A combination like Davis and Mike Conley would be better than Isaiah Thomas and any big man in the world, but that still means you need to go get that guard. And spoiler alert, like, we're not getting that guard. Like, Drew Holiday's the best guard we could get. There's no way we're getting a better one. So, like, that's what I'm saying. I think in this day and age, Isaiah Thomas is helping the Celtics win more than Anthony Davis is helping the Pelicans. Even though Anthony Davis is definitely the better player, I just think it's a guards league now. Mm-hmm. And yes, if we get him that guard, it'll be an explosive combo that nobody could stop. But I don't see how this team ever gets that guard or wing.
No, Isaiah Thomas has had for Jack Diddley and $6 million. So it's possible.
Oh, it's possible, but that's the thing that I think always keeps people going. I get it. You guys want to have hope, whatever. It's possible, so you'll look at the trades or the signings in the past that were the outliers, but I don't think this team is going to pull off one of the most brilliant trades of all time anytime soon, but that's just my pessimism or what I would like to call realism.
Right. Okay.
So, yes, if they pull off, because I think the Isaiah Thomas trade is pretty much known as the most lopsided, you know, best trade of the last couple years. So, yes, if Dell all of a sudden pulls off one of the best trades of the next couple years, you're right. Anthony Davis will have a great partner.
Yeah, no problem. It's easy. I mean, we just have to find a guy who's drafted last in the draft who turns out to be an all-star.
Yeah, it was discarded by one team because they chose a disgruntled player over him, and then another team who basically just signed him and had a stupid plan with three guards, so we're just dying to give him away. We just have to find situations like that, and we will reap and sow all the benefits.
Yeah, okay. As long as we have a plan, we're okay.
Yeah, like, you know what? I don't even think it'd take somebody great. Give me somebody like Jordan Clarkson with Anthony Davis, and I think you would see an offense that would blow your mind. Not even somebody great. I just think Drew Holiday is that bad offensively, and Tyreke Evans is that limited.
I will point out that I believe one point we were ranking Drew Holiday, and I said he was a B-minus defensive player and a C-minus offensive player. And I don't think my opinion of that has changed at all.
Yeah, if we were just starting point guard, though, I think I might go lower than C minus.
Okay.
So.
All right. So any other bright rays of sunshine? I know you can't even say it. Any other things you'd like to talk about?
Well, we got the week. I mean, we got – this is probably the easiest part of the schedule for the foreseeable future. This team has a legitimate chance to win its next three – be right in the eighth seed, or if they don't take advantage of these three, and then all of a sudden they've got to go play the San Antonios and the whatever of the world, they're going to be in trouble. I think they got, Cleveland again, OKC, San Antonio to finish off this month at Toronto. Basically, they're set to go on a losing streak at the end of this month, so these next three games are
vital.
Vital if they want to win, if you are rooting for reality and for this team to just stink so they could finally pull the plug, they lose these three and you could see them end the month of January something like 18-31, which I don't even think they would be stupid enough to be optimistic about their playoff chances. So these are big three games here. We've got at Indiana on Martin Luther King Day, Day I lost my virginity, by the way. Congrats to me.
God.
What?
Nothing.
I had a dream, and it came true. What was it? Martin Luther King Day 1997? Ryan, be happy for me, man.
I'm very happy for you.
And I made a DiGiorno's pizza afterwards. Those are the two things I remember.
Mm.
Yeah, DiGiorno's pizza was pepperoni. I should have went with Meat Lovers. I needed more protein and energy, but I didn't have the foresight. So, Martin Luther King Day at Indiana, home against Orlando, home against Brooklyn. What is that stretch looking like for you?
To be honest, I haven't paid attention to Orlando in several weeks, so I don't know how they're playing. Indiana is
basketball. They went to Portland and won, and then they played Utah very tight. It was a tied game with about a minute left at Utah. So, again, they went into Portland and won this week and then played Utah right to the buzzer. So, playing pretty good.
All right.
Elfrid Payton, ever since they benched him, and then he blew up on the bench and they moved him back in the starting lineup. He's been, I would put his numbers over the past 3 to 5 weeks up there with any point guard not named Westbrook. He's been that good over the past couple weeks.
That's crazy.
He has been playing crazy.
All right, so here's what I say. I still think that Brooklyn is a gimme. I don't see any way that Brooklyn should be able to beat this team, provided it remains healthy. The Orlando game, since it's in New Orleans, I feel fairly comfortable about. Indiana is probably the most baffling team in the world, because whenever I go and look at a score that Indiana is involved in, it always feels like either they're losing by 25 or they're winning by 25. I'm sure if I actually went and looked at their schedule, that there's plenty of in-between games there, but it just feels like every time I'm like, oh, Indiana's playing tonight, how are they doing? It always feels like it's just a complete and utter wreck for one team. So I have no idea what to expect from Indiana when they come in. I mean, when we come in there, it's going to be the last day of a pretty long road trip. I kind of expect a loss. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's always weird, those kind of day games. The one time we played them, the only guy who was really having success was Miles Turner. They're more of a finesse team, which I think kind of helps us out. I think that game pretty much all comes down to all going to come down to Thaddeus Young, and if he really attacks the glass, I think that he would be the guy who would kind of be the X factor in that game. But on the road against a mediocre team, I just don't believe this team is going to win that game until I see it. So I guess I would kind of lean towards Indiana in that one.
All right. So I'm going 2-1. Do you think I'm being stupid, or you think that's what's probably going to happen?
So to me, that all comes down to the Orlando game. I would go 1-2, but I don't think that 2-1's insane.
Okay.
Yeah, last game at Utah, best defensive team in the league. Elfrid Payton put up 28 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists.
And I think I actually remember there was rumors that he was available this summer.
Oh no! I mean, he was available a month ago. Like, they were just willing to give him away. They wound up benching him, and that, like, set him off. He got pissed. He went to the bench, and then all of a sudden he just started putting up a really solid game. So,
over his last 5, he's 15 points and 5 rebounds and 5 assists.
Yeah, he's just gotten back into the starting lineup. But, I mean, even in those games, he had –
yeah, he wasn't playing long minutes and still got some pretty nice numbers, too. So.
Right. So, he's kind of stepped up, and the guy for them that's up and down is Fournier. He's the one you don't know what you're going to get. So, to me, Orlando, I don't love that game because they're a pretty physical team. Ibaka, Vucevic, Biombo, even Aaron Gordon, there's a couple of guys who could really beat you up on the boards or, you know, at least be physical with you. So I think that one's going to be kind of tough. I think it'll come down to whether or not the Pelicans are hitting from deep that day.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would say 1-2 or 2-1. But like I said, if you are rooting for this team to face reality, an 0-3 week, I think would make it pretty hard for them to not seriously consider becoming sellers.
Okay.
Who do you think is, I mean, if we're also, I know you're rooting for the 8 seed, but let's say we're rooting for this team to quickly face reality. Who do you think of those other teams going for the 8 seed could realistically just all of a sudden win 8 of 10 and surge to where it's not really possible anymore for the Pelicans to get a playoff seed?
I want to say the Denver Nuggets.
Denver, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's still possible that Portland puts it together and gets hot on their shoot. Because if you take a look at Portland, their shooting numbers are kind of lower than where I expected them to be. So it's possible that they go on a hot streak and win a whole bunch of games. But for some reason, like, I think Denver has all the ingredients necessary for them to suddenly put it together. And they have enough experience that some of their guys can push it along. I don't know. I can never respect the Kings because of I just can't see that team's leadership pushing them to a place where they could win successfully. So
yeah, the thing that shocks me about Denver is that they're only 8-11 at home. Like, I don't get why they're not taking advantage of that. But yeah, I could see, and Denver and Portland are both teams that could be buyers if they went. I mean, if Portland all of a sudden just gave up a lottery protected pick to get Nerlens Noel, you know, or somebody that could help them out this year and went on a little surge. Like, again, I think that's all it would take. The Pelicans get to the end of this month, like 18-31. One of the other teams creeps up close to 500 and has a, what, six, seven game lead going into February. Like, you would think they would have to pull the plug then, but then again, the franchise never surprises me, so we shall see.
Okay. All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back next week to know if reality has arrived or not.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.